Oh, do we need to flip the CD now, Jim? Just did, okay.
So anyways, it's an honor to share our two speakers coming tonight because we go back several years now, I guess, five, six, 7 years? I don't know what it was. I had the privilege a few years back to teach in the School of Ministry in my old church. And in one of the classes, we have a student named Tara in the class with us, and she was an amazing young lady. Matter of fact, when she graduated that school year, she brought the whole message for the graduation service, and she did a phenomenal job. But in the class, I remember she said to me, she said, this is one of my favorite classes because it's a safe place. It was a safe place where I could share my testimony and not be judged. And she has an amazing testimony. And out of that, I share a quick testimony. She asked me if I come to her house one time and lay hands on her dog because the dog had tumors. And we saw some breakthrough. And that's how I met her mom, Papa Joe, and Mama Ava. And they started coming to Blazing Fire. Then Tammy and Pierre start coming. And they became a second family to me in a way. Joe and Ava, even though we're close in age, have been like a mother and father to me. And I love them deeply. So you're going to be moved tonight in what you're going to hear between this mother and this daughter. You're going to see the gospel in action. Not just simple praying, but doing it. And that's the difference about Blazing Fire. We like to just do the gospel. Not just share the gospel, but do the gospel. And sometimes the gospel does need feet to it. You're going to hear a story of redemption. You're going to hear a story of forgiveness. You're going to hear a story of freedom and breakthrough. And how Jesus came in someone's life and brought truth and freedom without shame, without guilt. And I love this family like my own family. God will bring people in your life, divine relationships that will last a lifetime. And this is one of those families for me where it's been divine in my life. So without further ado, help me welcome Ava and Tara.
I'm Tara. This is my mom, Eva, and we're pretty excited to be here tonight. First, I just want to start off, my reason for wanting to share my testimony, even though it's a little scary sometimes, is that one of the first times that God had me share was when I met Lonnie, actually, and it was a small school. There were about 11 students in total. And it was our very first retreat that we went on. We were up at Bethel visiting Reading for the first time. And I was just like, wow, this place is absolutely amazing. And God's like, yeah, it's time to get naked. I'm like, what? God, we're all sleeping in the same room. Like, this isn't okay with me, you know? Like, every single one of us are in the same room. And now you want me to share everything about my life. But I knew, like, he always has my best in mind. So I thought, all right, I'm just going to trust you. So I began to share and got really emotional and just kind of freaking out a little bit, like, wow, now everybody knows my secrets, you know? And the first thing that happened when I finished was three guys got up and surrounded me. And they just like embraced me and began to speak life into me. And they said, this is who you were, but this is not who you are. And this is who God says you are. And they just began to like tell me things that was gonna happen in my life and just reassure me that my story had power. So I was like, wow, okay, that's a good experience, God. I can trust you again. So a couple years after that, I'm in Africa. It was the very first school, Holy Given, with Heidi Baker. And we had been there for about a month. And God's like, okay, it's time to share again. This is in about 180 people that I had to stand up and say, hey, this is about my life. And again, I was like, okay, God, this is another opportunity to trust that you have my best in mind. So this time he said, don't ask for prayer. Don't share with anybody that I've asked you to speak. And I just want you to let me prepare you. And I'm like, wow, all right, this is really scary now because I don't even get to ask somebody, hey, will you just pray with me so that I feel better? So I did, and I just kind of let him prepare me, and even our instructor was like, you know, even if at the very moment you change your mind and you decide not to share, it's 100% okay. So I was like, all right. So I go up there and I began to share my story, and at the end, she just kind of reached over and gave me a big hug and was like, I love you. I'm so proud of you. You're amazing. And she said, you know, I think God really wants to breathe on what's happened. For 3 hours, God broke out in that tent. The microphone began to be passed around, and there were anywhere from 30 to 50 people that had open confession. Confession that had never been voiced ever in their lives to anybody.
Yay, God.
It's pretty intense. So that's my motivation, because I know God wants to do amazing things. So if there's anything that just kind of grabs your heart, like, wow, maybe God could do something for me, just jump in. Alrighty, so my name is Tara.
Hi, Tara.
Click. I tried that one. Or I tried. All right, so Tara is not spelled T-E-R-A or T-A-R-A for me. It's actually T-E-R-U-A-H, pretty different. And I found out right before I was going to Israel a couple years ago for the first time that the actual root of my name was a Hebrew word, and the root that it comes from is Ruah. And Ruah means to make a loud noise, to cry aloud, as in weeping, to shout in joy or alarm or in war, to sound a trumpet. You can use it in battle. You can use it in praise. You can use it to just stir people up. So basically, my name is a sounding alarm, like, get up, let's go, let's get ready. It's a literal sound that is played on the shofar.
Wow. You want to play?
Domalee has been practicing a little bit, and she's going to play my name so that we get to hear what it sounds like. Those 9 short, quick blasts, that's the teruah on the shofar. So, like I said, I just found this out a couple years ago, that was the meaning of my name. Growing up, I didn't know what my name meant. I would look it up in every baby book I could find. I would search online, and I could never find the meaning of my name. And so I didn't really know who I was.
So growing up, Tara was a miracle baby. She was my miracle baby because the doctors had said I would not have any more children. And I had lost a son, and they couldn't explain why I had lost him. They said it was most likely I would not have another child. So in the midst of that, we tried. And lo and behold, here comes Tara. Tara was born. And, you know, I lost a son, and her father was hoping that this was a boy. And we only had boy names picked out. So we were preparing for a boy, because we knew that God was going to give us back a son. And Tara was born instead, a little girl, beautiful little girl that came into our lives. And we had her at a midwife center. So even then was an ordeal that wasn't ordinary to have a child that way in those times. We had to go into Texas to have her, where it was legal. So after three days that she was born, I found her name in a book. I said, okay, I have only boys' names. Let me look for a name. And I knew that I wanted to name her with something, a special name, something different, something unique. And so I found the name Tara. And I loved the way that it was spelled. It was unusual. And the meaning I loved, even though I forgot what it was. And then her father was so disappointed that she was a girl, because he really believed that she should have been a boy. And the only way that he could face that is to reject her. He didn't want anything to do with her. And so because of that disappointment, I believe that Tara lost her identity. This is when she began to feel unwanted, unloved. And so later in life, she was named Terrible Tara. She got that nickname. And I'm here to tell you, you know, words are powerful. She was really living up to that terrible Tara that was put on her. And so she began to lose her identity at such an early age.
Yeah, like my mom said, I definitely lived up to being Terrible Tara. Graduating high school, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. There were a couple ideas that I had, but not really knowing who I was and not really having much of a relationship with God. Granted, I grew up in a Christian home. There just never was a real relationship that had been built. I knew who God was, and in times when I was in serious trouble or I didn't want to get caught doing something, that's when I pretty much cried out to God. There were some, you know, intimate moments with him, but it was basically to save me. Like, get me out of trouble, I need help, and I'll serve you and follow you. And then, okay, I'm out of trouble, all right, and now I'm on my own again. I'm gonna do my own thing. And so I had been so involved in drugs. Pretty much anything that anybody could introduce to me in high school, I was interested in it. I wanted to give it a shot. And there were definite times where I couldn't even remember 2 weeks prior when I had been sober, if I had even been sober or not. It was just a continuous part of my life. Everything that I did involved drugs, and that's where I began to find part of my identity. Even though I had a good front, I got almost straight A's in high school, and I was in sports. I ran cross country for a couple years, and you know, I knew just enough to kind of cover up, to make it look like I had everything in order in my life. But on the inside, I knew I couldn't even trust myself. So I thought, if I go to the college that I've gotten into, I'm probably going to end up overdosing. And this was a real fear. I really did not trust that I had enough control to say no. And so at that point, I had been a little bit interested in the military. There's a lot of military people in my family. And so I decided, well, instead of having to confess to everybody that I need help, I'll just join the Army, and there's no way that I can get away with doing drugs there, and so it'll just kind of, you know, handle that for me. So I went ahead and signed up my senior year of high school, and a couple months after I graduated high school, I went into the Army. I did my boot camp in Missouri, and things were pretty awesome. I was having an amazing time. It was everything that I wanted it to be. I absolutely ate it up.
Yes, so here we were in San Diego, and all this going on, Andrew and I were so oblivious to it. like we didn't know all this was going on. So when she came to us and said that she wanted to go into the army, we're like, the army? What do you want to do in the army? She was so convincing that she brought her recruiter so he could convince us that it was a good thing for her to go. And after she explained what the reasons were, we thought, well, maybe it will be a good thing because she won't be alone. She'll be supervised. She'll have someone that will keep track of her. She'll have someone that she has to answer to. And so we thought that was a safe place for her to go, even though we had our reservations. And since Joe was in the service, he figured it'll be good for her. So we agreed to let her go into the Army. At that time, we were relocating here to the Bay Area, and we were not plugged into any church. We had a job that was demanding, and which we're still at it, but we've learned how to work with it. And we were just going to church when we could and trying to find our place. And so because we didn't get off on Sunday together, I would go with, Tammy was living in San Jose at that time, and I went to church with her there. And I remember going there Sunday morning, and you know, sometimes you're tired and you get relaxed and sometimes you fall asleep. Back then, in that place, it's not good. Here, it's good. So I know, and then the pastor that morning was talking about a story. Well, I like stories, so my ears perked up and I was listening to the story, which I'd like to share with you tonight. And just to show you how God prepares us for what's to come. We may not know it at the time, but he always prepares us. And so the story goes like this. It was about a Christian family in his church, a well-to-do family, a very prominent family. They had one son whom they loved very much. They lived for him. They brought him up in the church. They raised him and taught him everything about God. But you see, the son had his own mind, and he was beginning to have feelings that he was dealing with, and he wanted to come clean with his parents. So he told his parents, Mom, Dad, I think that I'm gay. I have these feelings that I'm struggling with, and I really believe that this is for me. I believe that this is, God would give me these feelings. And so the parents were shocked. They were devastated. What was their son thinking? What was he saying? What happened to all the teachings and all the love that he has shared with him? But the son said, no, I really think that this is where I'm supposed to be. And so the parents said, you can't stay here if that's what you're going to do, because we don't agree with that. And so the son moved out, left. And then after a while, the son was used to having his parents. Here he was alone. And so he tried to reach out to them. Maybe they will understand. Maybe they will see it. Maybe they will just help me to understand these feelings. And so he tried reaching out to them, and the parents said, no way, no how. Until you change your way of lifestyle, you are not welcome in our lives. You are not welcome in our home. You cannot live with us because this is not what we taught you to be. And so the son left, hurt, brokenhearted, rejected, feeling terrible. He was struggling already with those feelings, and he left because his parents didn't want him anymore. As time went by, he just could not stand all the hurt and all the pain that he was going through. He didn't know what to do. And so one day he decided that he had the answer. And he decided to go and finish his life. He went and he hung himself. He thought this was the only way that he could bear the pain that he was holding, because his parents could not accept him. How could the rest of the world accept him? And so he ended his life. And I thought, oh, how sad. How sad those parents must be today, because now they really don't have a son. Really, they don't have him anymore, and there is no hope. And I remember thinking, God, if I'm ever confronted with something like that, help me not to react that way. Help me to just love. And so, you don't know what you're going to hear or why you're hearing that. And so I shared this just to let you know what God knows what lays ahead. And so Tara was in the army. We were getting calls from her saying that she was doing good, that she really liked it, she was enjoying it, she was excelling, she was a runner, and she was top of her company, even of guys.
I beat pretty much all the boys that I was friends with.
And here she was. And we were so proud of her, and we thought, well, maybe we made the right choice for her. Maybe this is what she needed, structure, and she was becoming everything that we had hoped for her. And so we even got to go to her graduation when boot camp came, because it was, boot camp is hard. There was a video they showed us. Had we seen that video, it said, no way. And she went, and she excelled, higher to even to our expectations. Even her sergeant spoke quite highly of her, how great she was. Here she was, the shortest of the whole company, and yes, she could compete with the tallest of them all. And so we were so proud of her. And after boot camp, she got stationed at Fort Campbell, and the calls became fewer. So she was, we fear she's settling in. But you know what? There's a mother's intuition. Phone calls tell you things even though words are not spoken. So something was not right.
And I began to put a wall. I purposely put the wall up because I knew I was hiding from things. Things that I didn't understand that were way beyond my control. And I began to hide, began to isolate. And even though there wasn't the temptation of drugs anymore that I had found my identity in before, there's a lot of drinking in the military. So I learned how to drink. And I know within no time, I, without a doubt, was an alcoholic. At the age of 19, I went to the doctor one day at sick call, and pretty much the standard procedure is if you're a woman and you're in the military and you sneeze and you gotta go to the hospital, then they're gonna give you a pregnancy test. So as I'm in there expecting that, they tell me I have the flu or, you know, a stomach bug or something, the doctor comes in very nonchalant. He's like, okay, so you're pregnant, and this is what you're going to do, and this is where you need to go from here on out, and we're going to get you some prenatal pills to go ahead and start taking. And I was just like, what? How can I be pregnant? And I began to think back a couple months that there was a night I had gone out with some friends, and I hooked up with a guy, and I ended up going home with him, and that was the only person I had, or the only male that I had been with in the last year, and that was the only way I knew his first name, and that was pretty much it. And I knew we were stationed at the same post, and that was pretty much it. So looking back on my childhood and my relationship with my biological dad, and knowing that there was a void, even though I knew who he was, and I was able to contact him, if I had had this child, they weren't gonna ever have that opportunity. And again, they were gonna have a crummy father. And I thought, there's no way I'm gonna put another person in this world with a horrible father figure. So I decided at 19 to have an abortion. I didn't tell my parents. I didn't even tell my sister. The only people that knew were the ones that had to give me permission to leave the base to actually go and get it done. By this point, I had been getting propositioned by women. In the beginning, I was like, okay, this is really weird. That's not even legal in the military. I had to sign a waiver saying that I wouldn't even use the word gay, you know, or else I would get kicked out. And I couldn't believe that there were so many women propositioning me. The first 8 out of 10 women that I met on that base were gay. So after some time in making friends and building a little bit of relationship with them, because they were some of the nicest people to me, they accepted me, they didn't care who I was or what I didn't have or what I looked like, they just fully embraced me. And so I thought, well, there's nothing wrong having friends that love you. So I began to get involved with a crowd of women that were living a gay lifestyle, and soon I began to feed my lack of self-esteem with the compliments they would get me, and that's where I got my love. That's where I began to form part of my identity again, like, wow, this feels really great. Yeah, I'm beautiful, I'm amazing, and there's qualities about me that people, you know, want, and they want to share a life with me. That's incredible. So not too long after I was stationed at Fort Campbell, I started dating the girl who lived across the hall from me. We had a relationship for a couple months, and it didn't feel out of the ordinary for me, and I think that's what freaked me out the most, because I thought I would feel that this is absolutely wrong, because even though I didn't want to follow God, I didn't have much of a relationship with him, I still thought it's probably not okay, because most of the people in the world aren't fully embracing homosexual lifestyles. So I just expected to feel this horrible guilt or shame or just like, maybe this isn't right, but instead it felt absolutely right, and I thought, wow, I finally know who I am. So I just latched onto that title, and I began to wear that and was like, yeah, this is exactly who I am. This fits me. So my roommate, we were living together for about a year, and during that time she ended up marrying a Marine who was stationed a couple states away from us, and it was really out of the blue because I didn't even know she had a boyfriend, let alone a fiance, and next thing I know she's getting married. So she gets married, and as we build our friendship, we begin to get a little closer and a little more closer, and some boundaries were starting to get crossed. And about 3 months after they had gotten married, she propositioned me one night, and I thought, no, this isn't okay, you know. Bottom line, I still have some morals, whether I'm a Christian or not a Christian. It's not okay to, you know, have a relationship with somebody who's married. That's just a breach of contract. It's not acceptable. So I tried to push away, and just again, like, not really knowing who I was and really getting my love from anywhere that was dishing it out to me. I just latched on, and we began dating. And about 2 months after we had been together was when I had found out I was pregnant. So again, that was another factor, like, how can I raise a child if I'm choosing a very different lifestyle? I just don't want to bring a life into this world and already have so many things thrown at them that they have to battle with. So we decided that we were going to have this relationship, whether it was right or wrong, whether it was okay in the military or not. And of course, that caused some friction. It's literally against the law in the military. And after a short while, both of us ended up finding ourselves being kicked out. She was kicked out first for being gay, and they did that to try to get to me, to antagonize me. And so I just turned around and gave them enough ammunition to kick me out so that I could build my life with this amazing woman that I thought was who I was supposed to be with for the rest of my life.
Wow. Mother's intuition. I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what. So Tara gives us a call, and she says, Mom, I'm leaving the Army. And I'm like, how can you be leaving the Army? Isn't it for 4 years? She says, I found a way. I'm getting out. I had enough of it. We're like, okay. Now I could feel there was something not so good about it. Says, and she just said, nope, I really need, I'm out of it, I'm done with it, I don't want this anymore. What happened? I'll tell you all about it later. Can I come home? Of course you can come home. You can always come home. And so we were delighted. She was coming home. She said, but I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I'm such a disappointment to you. I'm sorry that I didn't complete it, that I'm such a failure, that I didn't do what I said I was going to do. I said I was going to do this so that I could go to school and you wouldn't have to pay for us and you didn't have to support me. I was going to do all these things, but I'm not going to do all that. I'm such a disappointment. And I just said, Tara, you'll never be a disappointment. You can always come home. And look, you went through boot camp and you did it. Not everyone can say that. So yes, come home. And she said, oh, my friend is also out of the army. And I left it at that. I didn't want to ask what that was all about. And I'm like, okay, well, come home. I said, because you're not a quitter. Don't ever believe that you are a quitter. You're just coming home. And so when she came home, we were delighted. We went to the airport to pick her up. And guess what? Her friend was with her. Somehow, she didn't say she was coming with her, or I didn't hear that her friend was coming with her. And here I had two girls in our home. They moved in, and they moved in. It was like their house. They were very comfortable. And, of course, we were working. Most of the day we were gone, and they had all the house to themselves. And I would see things, and I'm like, I don't think something's right here. But you see, the blinders, you don't want to find out. You don't really want to know. You just know there's something there. And you're waiting for her to... I was waiting for Tara to tell me. But we never talked. We just lived. And after 3 months, it just became... The tension became bigger and greater, and there were hurtful things that were said and done, and we just didn't know how to handle such a situation. Because, you know, Tara came home brokenhearted. All the troubles that she had, all the things that we didn't know what she had faced and what had happened, we didn't know any of that. I just knew that she had gone, was coming home. She was coming home earlier than what we had anticipated. And so after 3 months of them living with us, I decided I need to talk to her. I need to find out what's going on, what's up, what happened. Because they had become disrespectful. There had been arguments. And one argument just really, really got out of hand. We were yelling that she did not know God. There was no God. How did I know that there was a God? She did not feel God. She knew there was no God. Because if so, this would not be happening. And that she would be able to stay in our home for as long as she wanted to do whatever. And she knew she did not want to live the life that we lived, that we had raised her with, that because that was not her. She did not want that kind of life anymore. So after that argument, Joy and I had a discussion. We said, we need to ask her to leave because we don't know what to do. She doesn't want to talk to us. Actually, her friend was very nice. She actually brought out the good things out of Tara. And I'm like, wow, wow. But I'm like, no, there's something totally wrong here. So she left. We gave her 2 weeks. You have to leave. That was the hardest thing that I had ever done, is to ask her to leave. Here I had asked her to come home, and here I'm telling her, leave, go. I don't care where you go, just go. 2 weeks, you're out of here. So they decided to go to Chicago, because that's where Mimi was from. And it was fine. Good, go. Actually, I believe I helped her pack her stuff to go. And so on the day that we took her to the train station, because, see, I wanted her to take everything. I didn't want nothing left behind. And so we put her on the train station with all her belongings, and they took off. And I felt that was a hard day. That was a sad day, because here was my daughter, and she was not any better than what she was when she first came. We hadn't had the opportunity to talk and to pour love into her, because she didn't want mama's love at that time. And so I'm like, God, She's going away, so far away that I will not be there, be able to be there to see where she's at, to see what she's doing, to help her out. But I know that you're going with her because, you know, I gave her to you. I reminded God, I said, I dedicated her to you. She is yours. You just loaned her to me, and now she is yours. And I know that you will take care of her. And I am putting all my hope and all my trust in you that you will keep her safe, that you will watch over her because I won't be able to do it. So after a few days, it had not been long. She got, actually took her like 4 days to get to Chicago on the train. It was a long trip for her. And that was the beginning of the life that she had chosen. And so she's on the train. She gets to Chicago. And she moves in with her friend's grandmother. I didn't know any of this. But one day I got a phone call from this lady. She even identified herself as being the grandmother of Mimi. And did I know what my daughter was up to? Did I know what she was doing? And how could I have raised a daughter this way? And how could I let her do this? And why was I letting her destroy her granddaughter's life? I didn't know what she was talking about. And I'm like, she says, I am going to have her call you, and she is going to tell you everything that you think you don't know. And so I'm like, wow, okay. And I hung up the phone and I said, this is so interesting. Here, her granddaughter has been at our home for 3 months. We did everything for her. We gave everything to her. And here my daughter is in her house and she cannot stay there. She's not welcome there.
Yeah, when Mimi and I, and we are using her real name because she is absolutely excited about me sharing. She loves that I get to share my story and was really excited that my mom gets to share it as well. When we moved into my mom's house, I had kind of warned her, you know, my parents grew up believing something totally different. They are not really going to be okay with us being a couple, so we're just going to be friends. And that's how it's going to be until I decide that I want to tell them. Well, the thought of confessing that to my mom freaked me out. It freaked me out so bad because even though it felt so right for me and I had absolutely come to this decision that this is who I am and this is how I fit, I knew it was gonna ruin her. It was gonna break her heart. She was gonna be crushed, and I tried avoiding that as long as I could, but in the midst of trying to avoid that, we were just mean. And I did a lot of hurtful things, and I remember that day very clearly, that things just escalated, and my mom had asked Mimi for some help around the house, and she said, yeah, no problem, I can clean for you. And so Mimi had cleaned some stuff for her, and my mom came home from work. I'm sure she had had a really hard day, and something was done incorrectly, and she went to go and correct it. But you know when you kind of have beef with somebody and you want to correct them in love, but it's more like you're bringing out the whip and you're like, how dare you? You did that wrong. It's kind of how it came out. And so I jumped to Mimi's rescue and I'm like, I have to protect her because my mom is going to lash out and I don't want there to be any hurt feelings. And in the midst of that conversation, religion came up as a topic. And I remember my mom saying something about like, well, that's not what God would even expect or some type of expectation of God. And I said, you know, it doesn't really matter. This isn't about God because, for one, she's a Buddhist. So she doesn't follow your God. And I don't even really know what I think about God anyways. This is something that you and Dad have decided to do. And it's not for me. It doesn't work for me. I don't want your stupid religion. I don't want it. Because all I had experienced in church growing up is witnessing rejection, being rejected myself. I would go to church with my father in Texas, and people would walk up to him, and they would see that I was a tomboy, and they'd be like, oh, this is your son. And he wouldn't even correct them. And it hurt. But as a little kid, I knew deep down that's what my father wanted. So I tried so hard to be the little boy that he wanted. So that day when everything just escalated, I knew I can't confess. And I can't live here because explosions like this are not good for anybody. And bottom line, ultimately, I didn't want to disrespect my parents. I didn't want to. But me having such an alternative lifestyle in every way, shape, and form just wasn't going to mix with them trying to have a house where they believed in God and they had the love of God there. So when they gave me an ultimatum, I was kind of excited because I knew, wow, okay, I'm off the hook. Let's go move to another place. I can have my own identity there. I can pretend like I'm one person on the phone, go home and do my little visits a couple times a year, and that'll be great. It'll be a lot easier. So we didn't really know where to go because we knew Mimi's grandma who had raised her, so it was pretty much her mom. We knew that she was going to be a little difficult to live with. And so we tried living with a couple of her friends first. And it was in the ghetto on the south side of Chicago. And I remember hearing what I thought were fireworks at night. And so after the second or third night there, I mentioned to Mimi, hey, where are those fireworks being shot off at? It sounds really close. And she just started laughing at me. And she's like, those aren't fireworks, those are gunshots. I'm like, wow, that's like a block away. And I would walk down the street, and in that neighborhood, I was in no doubt a minority. All eyes were on me at all times. It was the most uncomfortable feeling I had ever felt in my life. So after a couple days, I said, you know, I can't handle this. Let's try another friend. So we tried another friend, and something happened with her and her parents that day, and they got into a huge argument, and so it wasn't okay for us to come and stay anymore. And our last result was staying with her grandma. And 2 days went by, and her grandma is one of those older black ladies that are just like, this is my house, you are gonna follow my rules, I don't care who you are, and I will know your business if you are in my house. So, yeah, she scared me. So we walk in the house after being gone. We were looking for jobs because we only had about $200 to our name. And we walk into the house, and she walks up to us, and she's like, get in the room. We're having a conversation now. And we're like, what? And she's like, well, since you didn't want to tell me about the military and how you got out, I went ahead and I called the Army today. And I spoke with your sergeant, and he told me the story. So then I called your husband, and he and I had a conversation. So what do you have to tell me? And in that moment, I'm like, I have nothing to tell you. I just want to run out and hide. So she gave us a couple minutes to collect ourselves. She said, I'll be back in here in 5 minutes, and you better have your story ready for me. So Mimi said, hey, we have no option. We got to tell her what's going on. And I said, is she going to kick me out? Like, what's going to happen? She's like, honestly, I don't know. So sure enough, she comes back in 5 minutes later, and Mimi starts to try to tell her, you know, Tara and I have decided to have a relationship together, and This is what we're doing. We've been discharged from the military now, and we're going to get jobs, and we're going to move in together. And her grandma said, no, you're not. That is not who you are, and I don't care who this person from California thinks that she is, but she has not turned my daughter into a lesbian, and that is not who you are, and you need to call your husband. And she said to me, you need to call your mom. She's waiting for a phone call. And I thought, she's waiting for a phone call? How does this woman even have my mom's phone number? She apparently went through our stuff when we were gone and found a phone number, gave my mom a call and let her know, hey, your daughter has something to tell you. So she said, you know, she's already waiting for your phone call. I let her know earlier that you will be calling her tonight. And this will be the last night in my house. So I really didn't have a choice. I called home and was crying at this point. I was in the dark, had all the lights turned off, and I tried to wait until her grandma went to bed so that I could have a private conversation, but I knew she was listening. So I tried whispering, but you can't really whisper when you're sobbing. So I remember telling my mom, Mom, Mimi is my girlfriend, and this is how I'm going to live my life. And the first thing she tells me is, no, you're not. That's not who you are. That's not who God says you are. But no matter what, I love you.
And she took the words out of my mouth. Yes. So I got the phone call. And she said, I have something to tell you. Because I had been waiting for the call. This woman had said. Like, wow. She went further than I did. You know, I didn't go there because of past experience. My parents had accused me of things that were not true. And that hurt me so much that I said, I will not do this to my daughter. She can come and tell me when she's ready. And so that's why I took that. Yet I saw things and I said, you know, God tells you things. And you're like, yes. But I waited until my daughter could tell me that because I believed that it was a lie from the enemy. And so when she said, Mom, this is the lifestyle for me. I feel good. This is what I want. And said, no way. No way, Tara. Holy Spirit reminded me of the story of this because I could have said, forget you. You know, I don't ever see you. I could have acted like these parents did. But I knew I had heard that story. I had saved it in my little bank card here that one day I would need that. That I would not speak the same words as these parents did. Because I knew that as long as she had life, God was at work in her. I knew as long as she had life, God was working on her behalf. Because, see, we were going to pray for her. We were going to pray for a miracle for her. Because I knew that, well, this is not God's life. This is not his choice for her. And we knew that God had something better for her. And so I told Tara, I love you. There is nothing that you can do that will change that. There is nothing that you can say that will change that. And you will always be welcome in our home. You can come whenever you're ready. We will be here. The doors are open for you to come. And I knew at that time that that was the right response that she needed to know, that we loved her. I didn't know what conversation she had had in Chicago. I didn't know the troubles that she was facing, but I knew it was not good. And so when I hung up the phone, I was mad. I was like, what happened? What happened to my daughter? I let her go to the army. I sent her to the army. And this is not the way that I sent her. What did they do? Who am I going to blame? Did I not love my daughter enough? Did I not teach her right? How could she choose this after we had taught her everything different, opposite of what she was choosing? If I'd had a number, I would have called the army and said, what happened? I want an answer because this is not my daughter that I let you have. This is not my daughter. What happened? Why did you not do something? Why did you not call me and say what was going on? But see, I wasn't that brave or to call. And I just said, God, you know where she is. And I know that she belongs to you. I know that you are there with her.
So at this point in my life, pretty much cutting myself off from my family, deciding to risk everything in my life to make this relationship work with Mimi, I was out to prove the world wrong, that I knew exactly what the answers were and I knew what was best for me. So I knew enough that there were certain things that you shouldn't say to God or about God. There were things that were called blasphemous, and you shouldn't blaspheme the Holy Spirit. So I would have fun with that, and I would openly say things to God. I would openly cuss out Holy Spirit or Jesus, and I would say things to people who would come up and hand me a tract on the street, some of the most horrible things that you could ever imagine somebody saying. I would rip up their tracks. I would spit on them and throw them on the ground. I was so determined to prove that God didn't exist, because if I was this out of control and if I was attacking him to this extent and he didn't strike me down, he obviously wasn't God. Mm-hmm. He didn't exist. And if he was, he was pretty weak because he couldn't handle me. Yeah. That was my attitude toward God. So I had also told my family, you're not allowed to mention God in a conversation. The minute I hear you say you want to pray for me or you mention God, I'm hanging up the phone, and don't expect a phone call from me again. So conversations became really difficult because they just didn't even know how to relate to me. And I was so afraid to call home, but I longed for that connection to be there still, and so I would get high or I would get drunk, and then I would call because then at least I sounded happy on the phone. We dated for about a year and a half, Mimi and I, and at that point we decided we're going to get married. There's one state out of 50 states that will marry us. So we will do what it takes, and we're going to go there and get married. So we went and visited a jeweler, and we got fitted for wedding rings, and we even put a down payment on these wedding rings, and we had worked out our payment plan, when it would take us, you know, to be able to pay it off, and then we could plan the wedding and all of that. And I thought, you know, I really need to get a job, because if I'm actually going to be marrying this person, I should probably contribute a lot better than what I am now. And I thought, well, I don't want a regular job. I want something kind of fun, and I feel really lonely here in Chicago. I don't know anybody. I have no friends other than her. And maybe bartending school would be an awesome thing to do, because then I could work in a bar. I would have a social life. I would have friends. I could even work in the gay district and be a bartender there, and then we would have other friends that were gay, and we would be able to be introduced into that arena of things and finally have some connection and affirmation. But we didn't exactly have the money to do it, and so I called home.
And so while Tara was in Chicago, we kept in touch. She would call us. She was always good about keeping in touch. Some of her calls were great, and some of them were like, something's going on. And you know what, to think back, I'm like, God knew what he was doing just to keep enough connection. We did not sever it. That wall did not keep us all apart, even though there was a wall between us. And at this time, we weren't connected to church. And isn't God awesome how he just puts us there, that we had nowhere to call, nowhere to run to, but to him. And I believe that that was a time that was a special time, because, you know, I didn't want to tell my family. I didn't want to tell my friends what Tara had chosen, because, you know, one day I knew she would be back. And how would they treat her? How would they react to her? How would they see her? I didn't want anyone to know that. So I kept it with I believe that God purposely kept us together, that we just leaned on each other. Tammy and I would talk and we would pray and we, because she seemed to be able to talk more to Tammy than to me. And we would just continue to pray for her. And we said, God, we prayed the prayer, God, do whatever it takes to get her attention. And you know, I heard that's a dangerous prayer to pray because you will get results. And so we prayed it anyway. And so when Tara called us to say that she was doing good and that she was going to go to school, we thought, yay, she's going to school. That's what we always wanted her to do. But then she said, bartending school. Everything in me said, what? Why would you want to do that? Bartending school, this is everything that we are against for. Why would we want to promote that or send you there? Whatever possessed you to think that you would, that we would be okay to send you money to go to bartending school? And I was, no way could I do that. And so just she wanted to talk to Joe, and she talked to Joe on the phone. And I'm hearing Joe talking to her, and she told him everything, what he needed, she needed. Joe said, when do you need it? I'll send it to you today. And I'm looking at him, I said, you're sending her money for what? Something that we don't believe in? Why would you want to do that? Did you forget that we lost Georgie to alcohol? Why would you send that to her? You know that's a dead-end road. You know where that's going to lead her to do. We can't do that. I'm not going to send her my money. And so Joe said, no, we're going to send her the money. Because, one, she says she's going to go to work. And two, she's going to make money. She won't be asking for money. She'll be taking care of herself. And I'm like, no way can I do that. So we had words. Why would we do that? But he sent her the money. Against my best wishes, but he sent her the money. And she got the money, and she enrolled in school.
And I loved it. The first day was awesome. I had such a fun time, and I thought, yeah, once again, another piece of me. I found another part of my identity. This is going to be great. And even the instructor of the school thought, wow, you know, you're doing pretty amazing. Most people don't really catch on this quickly. And so we had gone through about 3 days of school, and during those 3 days, I had decided, you know, if I'm going to go to bartending school, I'm going to do this all the way. I'm going to quit drinking. I'm going to quit smoking. I'm not going to do any drugs. I'm going to be absolutely clean. That way I can get a job as soon as I graduate, even possibly before I graduate. I can go ahead and land a job. And so I did that, and on our third day of school, they decided to change how our class was going to go. And normally, they do not show videos about the legalities of being a bartender and how vital it is to be very aware of who you are serving. Because if you accidentally serve somebody just a little too much alcohol and they get in a car and they end up hitting somebody and that person ends up dying, because you gave them a drink, you can do just as much time as the person who hit them and ended up killing them. And that blew my mind. I thought, wow, I could actually have innocent blood on my hands. Because I know there's a lot of times in my life that I had had drinks and I shouldn't have had drinks, but I pretended to be okay. And I fooled the bartender, and the bartender served me. And I thought, wow, I could actually be doing my job and killing people at the same time. And it just kind of weighed on me, and I couldn't shake it. So when I got home that day, I just kind of was stirring about everything that was going on. I loved it, and it was great, but at the same time, how could I have this much responsibility on my hands? I didn't think that I could do something like that, and I hadn't slept in 3 days. Because even though I was excited and doing well, there was something that I could not rest. So I was becoming a little delirious. And by the time my girlfriend got back home that day, I just broke down in tears and I was crying. And I'm like, I'm just stupid. I'm worthless. I'm nothing.
I can't even remember the drinks that I knew yesterday, and I just laid it all out there, and I'm like, I can't even sleep. Normal people can sleep, and I can't even do that. What's wrong with me? And she just began to reassure me, you know, Terry, you're amazing. You're awesome. I love you, and these are all the good things about you, and you're going to do just fine, and you're having a rough start, but you just quit doing drugs, you quit drinking alcohol, you quit smoking cigarettes, and you started school all at the same time. Like, that's kind of a lot to handle. And I thought, wow, yeah, you're right. Maybe we should go get some pot. That'll definitely make me feel better. So we did. We went out looking, and within no time, we found some, and I thought, finally, I'm going to be able to relax and sleep, and everything will be okay. So she was getting high, and I wasn't getting high, and I didn't understand why I wasn't getting high, because we were smoking the same amount. And so I thought, well, maybe I should just drink a little bit, too. That'll help kind of get it going. So I took a couple shots of alcohol and still nothing, and I thought, how am I still sober? There's no way I can still be sober. I haven't even been doing anything for the last week. So I thought, well, you know, I don't really take pills because I don't like medicine very much. And if I take something, I usually have to take a pretty small dose. And I thought, well, I'll just take a couple Tylenol PMs. For sure that'll knock me out. I thought, I'll take a couple of them and no doubt I will be asleep in an hour. So I took a couple Tylenol PMs. About an hour or two went by, absolutely sober. So by this point, my girlfriend had had enough and was completely passed out, and I continued to smoke and try to get high. And I remember laying there on the bed, and the moment I would begin to feel it, I'm like, yes, there I am. And I would put the pipe down, and I'm like, yes, I can go to sleep. And instantly, the minute the pipe touched the table, I was sober. And this went on for about at least a half an hour, and I thought, okay, something is going on here. And part of me was going, yeah, see how worthless I am? I can't even get high. I'm trying. Nothing's working. And I think this was my absolute lowest point in my life because everything was just weighing on me. I could feel literal weightiness on my body. That stuff was just holding me down and holding me back. So I was laying in my bed, and a couple months prior, my mom had started sending the Tim LaHaye books, the Left Behind series, and at first I was mad, and then I started to read a little bit, and I thought, okay, maybe I can read this, because it's just a story. And after the second book that I finished, my girlfriend was like, hey, what's going on? I've never seen you read before. What are you reading? So I told her, no, you're not interested. You don't want to hear this. Because I thought, this is dangerous if she reads it, because what if she gets saved? That's not good for me, you know? So I forbid her to read these books, and I would hide them. And so that night I thought, you know, I need to know if you're real. More than anything right now in my life, I need to know if you exist. And I needed to know in that moment that if how I was living my life was okay, was bartending school right for me, was dating women okay, was it acceptable to God? And I think for the first time in my life, I was actually ready to hear what God had to say. He answered, and he answered audibly. I heard the audible sound of God, and all he said was, no. You know when you're at a concert and you're standing by the speakers and the bass hits and you could feel that music just flow through your body? That's how it was. I couldn't just hear the no, but I felt his voice. And it was so alarming that I looked at my girlfriend and I fully expected her to wake up and be terrified. But she didn't budge. And so I thought, okay, I need to call home and tell my mom I'm freaking out. I can't concentrate. I can't memorize my drinks. And she'll tell me that I'm doing good and don't worry about it, honey. Everything's going to work out. And I'll take that as my answer that life is good and everything's going to work out. And I don't really have to acknowledge that I just heard the audible voice of God.
So surprisingly, my mom didn't answer the phone, even though it was pretty late here. So I tried my sister, and usually it was pretty hard to get a hold of her. So I called her, and she answered the phone, which was weird. And she's whispering to me in the bathroom, and she's like, "What's going on? I have people here, but I can talk to you." And I'm like, "No, it's okay. It's bad time." And she's like, "No, are you okay?" And I'm trying to hide that I'm okay. And she's like, "What's up?" And she just began to talk to me. And I'm like, "Well, I think God kind of spoke to me, maybe, but I'm not really sure." And she's like, "Well, what do you think he said?" And I'm like, "Well, I don't really know, but, you know, maybe bartending school isn't right." And she's like, "Okay, well, if it's not right, then don't do it. And if it is, then do." And she's like, and I thought, "No, that's not okay, because mom and dad gave me this money. And I, what if I can't get the money back and the school's going to keep it? And I'm such a failure and I'm such a loser." And she just, she didn't really pry for information in that moment. She just kind of let me talk. And she let the conversation go as far as I wanted it to go. And she said, well, what else? You know, did God tell you anything else?" And I'm like, "Well, you know, he might have told me that dating Mimi isn't okay. But maybe that just means that we need to get married before we live together." And, you know, I'm trying to justify still and not really exactly follow him. And I just knew. And she said, "You know, regardless of what he said or what he didn't say, you know, bottom line, what do you want right now?" I said, "More than anything, I just want to sleep. It's been 3 days since I slept." She said, "Okay, let's just pray for sleep. Can I pray with you?" And I said, "Yeah." So she just prayed for the peace of God to come, and instantly, everything just left my body, and I felt so light, and I felt so free. It was the best feeling I had ever felt in my life, and I knew in that moment I could sleep. But I couldn't hang up. Well, I couldn't just leave the night as it was, because my girlfriend had woken up and seen that I was crying on the phone. And so I thought, well, I need to tell her something. So I get off the phone with my sister and I go in there and I say, "Hey, you know, God may have spoken to me. He may have said no about some things, but I'm not 100%. So maybe we just need to figure some things out, and maybe we just need to, like, separate until we get married, and I don't really know, but my sister can pray for you if you're confused, and you'll feel really good." So without asking her permission or my sister's, I dialed my sister, and I said, "Hey, pray for Mimi, here you go." So she said a quick little blessing and God give her peace prayer, because she despised her in that moment, but she knew, wow, God is doing something. There's no way I can not pray for this person.
Wow. All this going on, because we got the first phone call from her from the first day that she had gone to bartending school, and it was everything that she wanted to do. She knew the names of the drinks. She knew how to mix them. Now she was learning more. She was so excited because we had given her money and invested it in her new career. And so I'm like, "God, where are you? What is going on? She's not supposed to be liking this." And I'm like, "God, I know that you're there. Please, you have to do something." And so then, second day, I didn't get a call from her. Third day, Tammy calls and said, "Mom, something's going on. Tara's not doing good. Something really is going on. Just pray. Just pray." And so I'm like, "Wow, what's going on?" So later on, Tara calls and she's crying. And I'm like, "Why is she crying?" And she had just told me what she had experienced with God. And I'm like, "Wow. Wow, God did it so quickly. I was just asking him to do that." And I'm like, at that moment, I remembered, yay, that Joe said, "Let's send it to her. Because had we not done it, perhaps God, she would not be here today. Had we not done it, it might have ended differently." And I'm like, "Wow, God, thank you, God, that you are doing such a thing in her." And not only that, but he went on to do even greater things than just bringing her back to the Lord. So here was redemption. Here was restoration. Here was our daughter back. And she began to tell us about the things that were going on in her life. She went on a train ride, and a man handed her some scriptures, and a stranger. Isn't that like God? And just giving them to her. And she'd call and say, "Mom, this is what happened." And I'm like, "Wow." And he says, "I prayed for my toilet. It wasn't working. And guess what? It's working now." And I'm like, "Wow." So the stories just kept coming. And I'm like, "Wow, God, you really did something great." And I said, "And she's going to come home. Oh, no. Now what are we going to do? Who is this person that's coming back?" You know? And I was like, "Wow, God, you are amazing. You are amazing." Tara was always terrific. She was never terrible. The identity was just lost somewhere. And she is terrific, Tara. Our Tara that God gave to us. And we are so excited of what He is doing in her life. Were you going to change the slide? Okay. And so... And so Tarek is coming home, and I was so delighted that she was coming home because God had restored her. And immediately the Lord just like, "It's like the prodigal son. She's coming home. She's coming home. Wow. We have to give her a celebration. We have to do this. We have to throw out the red carpet and receive her to let her know we're so happy. We're so delighted of the choice that she has made now, that she believed what she heard God say." And so I called my family. Tara's coming home. Tara's coming home. See, they didn't know how great the celebration was. But I knew God had restored her, and He had returned her better than when she had left, better than when she went into the army. And so we gave her this big celebration, and then I have to give her a ring. So we purchased a ring to give to her to put in her arm to say, "I'm glad you came home. I'm glad that you're here with us." And one of the amazing things is one of the scriptures that Tara shared with me is Jeremiah 29:11. And that was the scripture God had given to me and had highlighted to me one day. And He says, "For I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you, plans that will not harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." And He really has a plan for us. He has a plan for us. Even before she was conceived, He had a plan for her. And it was the choice that she made is to say yes to Him. She was radical when she came home. And I'm like, wow. And that is how we came to find Blazing Fire.
Yeah, God told me no that day. And I knew instantly I couldn't hide anymore. The walls had to come down. But I kind of let God do it. I said, "All right, God, whatever you want to do, however you want to do it." I'm just going to leave that there because it's not moving. Okay. So I just kind of let Him have control. And when I woke up that morning, faced my girlfriend, and I said, "Yeah, God spoke to me, but I'm not really sure what that means. It might mean that we can't be together, but it might mean that we just need to get married." And she knew there was a change in me. She knew something had happened. It was night and day in me. My face looked different. And so that day she had gone to some type of rehearsal thing for her cousin. And this guy who lived upstairs from us had befriended us, Carl. And he had said, "You know, I know you guys don't have a car. So if you ever need a ride, just let me know. I'll give you a ride. I'm a stay-at-home dad, and a lot of times my wife even works nights, so she goes back and forth. So at any point in time, just don't hesitate to ask." And I had told Mimi, "You are not allowed to be friends with him because I know he's a Christian. He's a horrible man." But she was nice to him because she was just always that type of person. She made friends with everyone, and He had the most adorable two-year-old little boy. So they go. He drops her off. He picks her up that night. And as they're getting ready to get out of the car, she said, "Okay, Carl, what does God say about being gay?" And he's like, "Well, let's see. God, you know, the Bible." And she's like, "No. What does he say, yes or no?" And he said, "Well, no." She said, "Then I need to know Jesus now." So within 24 hours, Mimi was saved, and she brings him upstairs, and she said, "Tara, Carl's going to pray for you." I said, "No, he's not," because I knew something was really going to happen if I let him pray. And he began to come inside, and he just began to speak life into me. And he told me so many different times in my life that I should have been dead. He knew the situation. He knew where I was at. And he said, "In that moment, God preserved you." So within a matter of moments, I was on my knees and I was crying. And he just began to bless me and speak life into me and build me up. And he said, "You know, at any point you have a question, you come and knock on my door. And if I don't know the answer, I will look for it until I find it." Day two, we said, all right. Or actually, in that same day, we went church hunting because I knew we needed to find a church. We looked up every single church in the phone book. I called them. I left messages. Not a single church returned my phone call. I went and showed up at the doors, and I said, "Please pray for me. Something's going on in my life. I don't know what's going on, and I know I need God." And they said, "I'm sorry. We don't have time for that now." I even went to a gay-friendly church. Had a little rainbow up on top, and I was crying at this point, and I go into the office and I told the lady, "I need prayer. Can anybody pray for me, please?" And she said, "There's a calendar with events over there that you can look at." And I said, "You don't understand. I really need somebody to pray for me." And I'm bawling. And there's another person standing there in the office, and they're looking at me like, "Is this really happening?" And I said, "Maybe you can just take 2 minutes and pray for me right now." And she said, "I told you there's a calendar over there." Grabbed a paper and slammed it on the table. So I walked out and I said, "Mimi, I don't know. I know God spoke to me, and I know he wants us to follow him, but I don't know how." God knew how. He sent Carl, who lived upstairs, the only Christian in our building, a stay-at-home dad, who had the time. And he didn't shove religion down our throat, and he didn't ever once say, "You know, you guys are wrong, and what are you doing, and how could you still live together?" And he was just always there. His little boy would wake him up in the middle of the night and say, "Daddy, pray. Daddy, pray Tara. Daddy, pray Mimi now." And he remembered one time he wasn't getting up. He managed to crawl out of his crib and began to tug on his dad and say, "Daddy, pray now." This little boy spoke so much into my life at two. It blew my socks off, and with having a little boy that was so sensitive to the Spirit and having a father that knew that and fostered that, Carl did the same to us. We didn't know what prophetic words were. We didn't know that you lay hands on the sick and they be healed. You know, we just knew. You pray and you ask God for what you need,